everybody, and welcome to Shaman Sister Sessions, episode 120. I'm Michelle Hawk, and I'm here with my shaman sister, Catherine Bird. Today, we're talking about how to trust yourself, about all the ways in which our self-trust can get convoluted or distorted through our upbringing, through various suppression mechanisms that we may or may not realize that we're doing, and our best tools and techniques to be fully aligned with your inner wisdom, your inner self-trust, sovereignty, so that you can love your decisions so much that you don't need other people to love them for you. How you doing, Kat?
Amazing. I'm really good. I'm excited to talk about this. And I think because it's so important, and also it's something that is confusing for a lot of people. And it's kind of like self-love. It's one of those things where it's like, okay, that sounds great, and I should know how to do that. And then there's this like questioning of, do I actually know what that is? What is that even? What does it feel like? What does my life look like if that's my reality? How do I practice that? How do I cultivate that more? So I think that it sounds like so simple of a topic, but it's really complex.
And that's a good point too. I mean, all of these, I would throw self-care in that category too, like self-love, self-care, self-trust are these sort of nebulous concepts that people just either assume they know what they mean or assume that we should know how to do them, but they're actually skills that have particular energetic nuances, or to get very fancy, I would say there are particular, it's a skill set like anything else, right? And we just sort of assume that, oh, I should know how to love myself, or I should know how to trust myself. But unless someone actually breaks it down for us and teaches us the mechanics of trust in our body, trusting our emotions, trusting our thought patterns, trusting our guidance, all of the aspects of trust, like that, we're just going to be floundering around, right? It's like saying, okay, kid, like, here's the keys, good luck, go drive the car, without actually giving you the tools or the lessons to set you up for success. So let's talk about how to trust yourself without crashing the car.
Okay, great. Well, I think that, one of the main pieces here is that we have systematically been taught not to know how to trust ourselves. And it's a practice, right? It's a skill set. And then, like many other things, it's something that you have to put into practice. You're probably not going to do one medicine ceremony or one breakthrough coaching call or one of anything and suddenly become, I completely trust myself. You might realize the spaces where you have not done this very well. You might come to some serious realizations about decisions that you've been making. You might realize that you need to make some changes, but it's going to be on the daily practicing and cultivating this as part of the lived experience of your life. So it's okay if you make mistakes. It's okay if you go, oh, I really was not trusting my inner voice. I wasn't trusting my intuition. I wasn't trusting myself in that experience. And give yourself some grace and understanding, and maybe spending some time going deeper into what are the circumstances and the lived experience that have created that for you. And that can be a really deep, long discovery process and road of healing.
Yeah, I love that. Absolutely. And Kat, like you're saying, it is really the, putting in the hours at the gym, so to speak, right? Like it's a skill set and a muscle like anything else. And being curious and compassionate with yourself is hugely important as it is in developing any other new skill. So I loved what you were starting to touch upon about how our trust gets shut down. Shall we go there? Let's talk about the ways in which that gets oppressed, right? So I'm sure that everyone has had experiences as a young person. Like we're going all the way back to childhood, right? Where there's something that you didn't want to do, or something, maybe you got a weird vibe from that uncle who drank too much at family dinners or whatever, and you're like, I really don't want to hug that uncle. And your parents are like, no, come on, go be nice, go hug your uncle, he really wants to hug you, right? And so we have an example there, or, you know, pick your favorite example of being kind of either forced or coerced or manipulated or encouraged into doing something that all of your instincts are telling you, I don't want to do that. That doesn't feel safe to me. That doesn't feel fun. That doesn't feel comfortable to me, right? And the more we do that, the more we're shutting down that inner voice. And especially for people who are socialized feminine, especially for people who are, you know, growing up in unpredictable or traumatic households where they're having to override a sense of internal safety in order to belong, the mechanism of trust, the barometer by which we assess our inner reality, we assess our body sensations, we assess the information that we have available to us, and we make a decision based on that information internally and externally, and that communication goes completely haywire, where either we're not even hearing the information internally, or we're incorrectly interpreting the information externally. So then the decision we make is based on either missing or incorrect information. And that's, again, that's sort of the like very, very broad strokes.
Yeah.
Explanation, right? Of course, it's much more nuanced than that, but really, like, that's right. The basis of how lack of trust is created.
Well, I mean, it goes from the beginning, right? And so when you look into attachment patterns, and, you know, from the time you're a very small baby, and the way that your primary caregivers were responding to your needs and helping to mirror your feelings and emotions, and to show you that you're being understood, that what you're experiencing is real, is valid, is important. A lot of people don't have this, even from, you know, from the time they're a very small baby. So that sense of being able to feel, you know, insecure, like secure attachment, and that you are being safe in your environment, is something that a lot of people don't have from the time that they're in pre-birth, right? So this can be something that can feel like, I don't know where this came from. You know, it can be like, well, but my family seemed okay, or it wasn't that bad, a lot of people will say. But we have to look culturally, we have to look that this is systemic in our society. Just in clean your plate, even if you're not hungry, or just one more bite, you have to eat this thing if you don't like it, or having to get up at 6 a.m. every day as a child and force yourself to go to, you know, school and sit through things and be with people that you don't like and who are not listening to your body. So every single day it is put into you that what your body wants, what your body needs, what you want and need is not valid. It's not important. What you care about, what you're passionate about, those things don't matter. You need to stick to this very small space where you can inhabit what we think is right for you, so that you can succeed in school, you can succeed in life, and your life can look the way that we think it should, so that we think that you'll be happy if you do things the way that we think you should.
Comfortable, right? Like the people who are saying that is like, this is what is comfortable for our nervous systems. So you better stay within the box so that our nervous systems can stay comfortable.
Exactly. And this is so, it's so deep in, you know, whether it's in our religions, right? Going to church and you're just like, wow, I hate it here so much, or these teachings don't make sense to me. We can see right now in these things like don't say gay bill, or in telling trans children that they're not allowed to say who they are, just to claim this is who I am and this is how I'm living and it has no effect on you, but I'm going to listen to my internal reality. So people have been told, and so this can be an extra hurdle for people if you are trans, if you are non-binary, if you are gay, if you are all of these things that in a lot of times in our early society, we are being told, no, that's not true, or that's not real, or you just can't behave that way. You can't be that thing. So it can add in this extra thing where, okay, well, it doesn't seem like I was severely abused, or it doesn't seem like I was severely anything, but I have this sense that I can't trust myself because I've been told that I'm untrustworthy by the people that are supposed to be taking care of me.
Yeah. And most of the time, not explicitly, but through actions, through not, you know, you said something, Kat, that I want to elaborate on just a little tiny bit, like all the way back at the beginning when you were talking about how we're getting feedback for our feelings, right? So looking at the blueprint of how our nervous system's blueprint to even having a framework and understanding for body sensation and for emotion is that we are feedbacking off of the nervous systems of our parents, right? Or whoever are around as our close adult models. So, you know, to have the input of like, oh, you skinned your knee or you stubbed your toe, but it's okay, you're fine, right? Like even that is denying your inner sensation of I'm hurt, I'm in pain, I'm scared. This is a new sensation, right? Rather than validating like, okay, like it looks like you hurt yourself. Are you okay? Let's take some deep breaths and training your nervous system how to self-regulate, rather than like, oh, you're okay, that doesn't look that bad, right? Because it's more convenient for me that you stop crying and I want you to go back to playing, right? So even that, even something as well-intentioned and simple as that is hijacking our ability to self-assess and self-regulate and basically like glossing over an entire self-awareness check-in process. And so then we don't have the map for that. So now, and honestly, the whole reason we're doing this episode actually is because I ended up having conversations with, I think it was like 4 or 5 people within the space of just a few days about self-trust. And then it came up in conversation with me and Kat where it's like, okay, yeah, like that's why we have so many examples, you know, and this is a journey that I've been on too of really anchoring in self-trust. And, you know, why I have a lot of clients who are adults who are, you know, very well-established adult functioning humans in the world. And yet this piece around trust is still a very real growth edge because we're having to go back and relearn all the stuff that we didn't get to do as kids during the normal developmental window for for constructing a healthy feedback mechanism. Mm-hmm. Right. So if it feels weird, if it feels hard, if it feels really unfamiliar, like that's okay. Because again, you're going all the way back to working at the blueprinting of your nervous system.
Yeah. And I see this in myself. Like I see myself struggle with this at times, you know, where mostly I'm very self-trusting. I'm very self-aware. I'm very intuitive. I am successful and powerful and I'm all these things, right? And also there are spaces where I get into doubting myself, right? Where I have that doubt that comes in and you know, what I find is that we sort of have spaces in our life where that doubt lives more than others based on, you know, our own personal histories and traumas and things like that. And I noticed in a relationship that I've been in for the last year and a half, like I've noticed this space of knowing and feeling something very certain inside myself, being able to be self-aware about it, but then adding this layer of judgment on myself for not wanting or needing what I think that will make the person I'm in relationship happy, or that will not be disappointing, or that will not be harming, or that will is not in congruency with what society is telling me. And when I say society, for me, it's there's the regular society of, you know, the America and kind of the world and the things that I see and have grown up with. And then also there's the kind of subset of society of the spiritual communities of the, you know, the new age of the, you know, the coaching and healing and all of these, like I am entrenched in that subset society, which is technically very far outside the box of what is like the, you know, the normal, right? But I also see the influence of, oh, well, I should desire. If I don't, maybe there's something wrong with me, right? Maybe I'm not trusting myself in that moment.
Yeah, comparisonitis is a really good way to hijack your self-trust process for sure, right? And you mentioned also, you know, let's kind of just zoom back a little bit of, you know, again, it's like, I feel honestly like most of the time, it's not people trying to deliberately manipulate us or lie to us or hijack our self-trust process, right? It's honestly, I feel like most of the time it is people who themselves have a lack of self-awareness or self-trust, or they have a habituated pattern of being in the world that is comfortable and compatible with their nervous systems. And then things that are different from that trigger them into an arousal state, arousal meaning fear, trigger, anger, frustration, you know, you name it, right? It triggers their nervous system into activation. And it is the easiest and safest thing for them to do to shut down whatever is different, either through that, you know, through like a nice, like, okay, no, you can't go outside and play right now, sweetie, because you have to do your homework, even though you really hate this and your body needs to move and you've been sitting still in class all day. Like, I love you. You have to do your homework and then you can go play, right? Like even that as a well-intentioned directive in itself is, it is safe and convenient for me if you sit still and quietly and do this so that we can fulfill societal expectations of you being a good student and getting to a good college, so I don't have to worry about you, because I grew up with, you know, whatever stories or projections are playing out in this, you know, kind of well-intentioned mom vibe example that I came up with here, right? And so again, comparisonitis, where it's like we're looking at whatever society standards or whatever your micro community, the microclimate, values and culture of your community that you're in, really play, you know, especially because it has this kind of, it builds this momentum, it has this self-perpetuating cultural identity that if we're belonging to a community that has either values or goals or predominant emergent way of living that is really different from whatever our internal desires are, it can cause this either questioning, do I really want that? Is there something wrong with me? Or perhaps even just the need to kind of suppress that because it makes us feel a little edgy to actually voice what we really want. So yeah, so that's totally
a thing. I mean, a good example of this is just during COVID and vaccinations. And so I had conversations and, you know, supporting people who were, you know, sort of in very kind of mainstream jobs and were being extremely pressured by their community to be vaccinated, and were receiving a lot of flack and being like, you know, really struggling with this choice to go against what was in their immediate environment. And then I had conversations with people who wanted to get vaccinated or did get vaccinated, but we're experiencing such pushback and so much, you know, so much constant stuff coming up in their community that was anti-vaccination that they were also struggling. So it's like the same thing can be coming up, but depending on who's in your immediate environment can have a huge effect on how your decisions are being made and whether you're trusting yourself. Because in both of those situations, those people were having stuff come up of like, well, can I trust what I feel is right for me right now?
That's a really great example, actually. Well, it's can I trust what I feel is right for me right now? And also, I mean, that's a fun kind of fascinating one, right? Because it's like, I don't know. Do we want to go down that rabbit hole?
You don't need to go down that rabbit hole, okay. But in those experiences, you know, both people can be feeling I'm doing something wrong, or even getting that sensation of I am wrong, I am bad, starting to feel shame over having desires that are against their community. And this is really important because, and we're going to talk about this in our next episode, if you get involved in a community, and that can be any community anywhere, if that community has strong viewpoints and views, which every community does, then it can be so deeply indoctrinating to your system that it discourages your ability to trust yourself.
And then puts you in a dangerous position, potentially.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, absolutely. We're going to talk a lot more about that in our next episode, but for now, let's start looking at some ways around, how to build trust. Right. And I'm actually going to kind of walk you through a little analogy that I've used with a handful of people recently, because it just, again, it seems to keep coming up. Right. So, you know, imagine, you know, if you have a human child or you have a dog, right? I've, you know, walked people through all sorts of examples of this. For me, I imagine with my dog, right? Because I have a kind of nervous, you know, she's definitely a cat's metter. She's definitely a little anxious, a little fussy dog. And she does really well with consistency and predictability, which means that I have had the entire time that she's been with me, I have prioritized trust and her trusting me and us trusting each other as forefront in our relationship. And so you can imagine that, okay, with your child or with your dog or with whoever in your life, imagine that they are, you know, your dog's telling you, oh, I really don't want to walk down that street. I see a big truck and a bike and it's really scary and it's making loud noises. And you tell them, oh, you're fine. Nothing's happening. And you drag them down the street. Is that supporting trust or detracting from trust, right? And that's a pretty extreme example, but also, or you can imagine your kid is saying, oh, I really, you know, that activity, I really, like, it makes me feel really scared and I don't like the kids at that organization and I really want to, like, stop taking whatever activity this is and I, you know, it just makes me really sad and I'd really rather do this instead. And you say, no, it was my favorite thing growing up, so you trust me, you'll love it. I know that you're going to find something in it that you like. It'll be good for you. We're not quitters, right? And then they end up doing it, right? Is that supporting the trust in our relationship and or taking away? So imagine every time you're having that conversation internally of like, okay, I really don't like this. It feels really, my body's like clenching up. I'm having all this resistance to it. And then you make yourself do it anyway. That's points detracted from self-trust. Every single time you do that, right? It's just like, if you were to keep doing that with your kid or with your dog or whatever, they would not trust you. You would not have a solid relationship. Even if they love you, even if you love yourself, right? Just know that every time you override, you're putting evidence in the column of I'm not trustworthy. So your body and your mind and your heart are going to be not on the same page.
Yeah. I mean, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't do things that you're afraid of.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't do things that you're afraid of. There's a difference, right? There is a sensational difference between I'm afraid to do this because, you know, I'm afraid to fail, or I'm afraid to be seen, or I'm afraid to take this risk, or, you know, like we know what that sensation feels like usually. Sometimes it's hard to sort through those, and that can be a place where getting someone that we trust to ask us good questions and to like really, you know, sometimes Michelle does this for me where I'm like, okay, wait, hold on. Like, am I crazy here? Or, you know, what am I feeling? Like sometimes we have to ask, what am I feeling? Am I feeling fear because I'm afraid of this? Or is this actually something I don't want?
It's like discerning the difference between healthy and unhealthy sensation, right? And that does take some fluency. Mm-hmm. And so as we're getting into like, well, how to actually do this, right? That don't worry, we've been leading up to it. That's our next part, right? To look at how do we actually cultivate these skills? And it will take some time to sort out, especially at the beginning. It might take you, like, you have to sit down and be in a quiet place by yourself to feel your feelings in your body, to even write down, if it's helpful, like a list of the sensations and the thoughts that are coming up. That's totally okay. Take it back to super basics, right? But again, Kat, like you said, like, doesn't mean you shouldn't do things that are, you know, are scary, or, you know, sometimes we have to do things that we don't want to do, right? But, you know, again, the difference is between A, are you doing it all the time? And B, how are you setting yourself up for success when you have to do that, right? Like, occasionally I have to take Athena down a street she doesn't want to go down, but I set us up for success by encouraging her and being with her every step of the way and making it a little game and giving her treats and being like letting her know that she is safe, right? Like, just like you can do that for yourself, of let yourself know that you are safe, even if you are doing something that you don't necessarily want to do. So it can still be a trust building activity and exercise of like, hey, we did that hard thing together, right? And so you can make it so doing something challenging or difficult. And actually, I would say that's a really great way to increase self-trust, is walking yourself safely through challenging or difficult activities, because then you're giving yourself evidence of, I can do that. I do have my own back. I do trust myself. So how do we do that? Let's talk about what is that difference, right? So, I mean, that's kind of where we're going. Kat, do you want to tell us what that feels like in when you're evaluating that feeling sensation?
I think first of all, there is that space of coming into a regulated place where, you know, especially if we're confronted with something that is triggering us, or we're feeling like a lot of pressure about something, or we're in just a highly emotional space. You know, maybe we're in conflict with someone, it's kind of hard to trust exactly what we need, or we're in a situation that we're not sure if we're safe or not, right? We need to get to a space where we do feel like there is some safety in our environment, where we can take breaths and long, slow exhales and start to live inside of our parasympathetic nervous system so that our brain can function properly. If we're in our sympathetic nervous system and we're completely freaked out, we're going to make choices that are maybe the best choice, because we're going to choose to run away or do something, and, you know, that we really need to do to protect ourselves. But when we're looking at things like we're making life decisions and we're trying to figure out what to do with ourselves, it's going to come from a more regulated place. It's going to come from calming down our nervous system so that we can feel the sensations of our body. We're not being overwhelmed by the sensations that we're having. And that can be where we struggle, because if our system is used to going into override and we're going into fight or flight or freeze or fawn, and we're like constantly in that patterning, it can be like, well, I don't know how to trust myself because I'm always living in this overstimulated space. Mm-hmm. So learning how to regulate your nervous system is a big deal. So things like breath work, embodiment exercises, doing simple movements with your arms and your breath and linking your body and your breath, yoga, qigong, things that get you back in your body are really helpful. Mm-hmm. Shaking your body, like shaking the energy off, and coming back to center inside of yourself.
Yeah, awesome. And you know, I tell people is like, if you can't even hear what your body has to say, like if you have no idea what you are feeling, then you're cutting yourself off from your primary internal feedback mechanism, right? Like body sensation, you know, so let's look at our feedback mechanisms, right? Body sensation is a huge one, because then we're able to parse out the sensations of like, okay, does this feel expansive or contractive? Does it feel healthy, peaceful, soothing to my nervous system, or does it feel agitating and activating in a good way or in a bad way, right? So then we can look at, okay, what is the quality of the sensation? And then what does that mean for me about how my nervous system is responding to this? And if it's responding in an activated way, is it activated simply because that's unfamiliar, or is it activated because that feels unsafe? Right. And so that's where we can, you know, through soothing the nervous system and through getting to know ourselves and getting to know and map, it all comes from like the more attention you pay to this internal reality, and also like the more support you have to help you make sense of it. Also, let's be really honest of, and you know, I've called Kat plenty of times too and said like, hey, I like can't figure this out. Like I can't figure out what I'm feeling about this. I can't figure out what to do. I feel really activated, right? And having someone help walk you through what the sensations mean can be really helpful.
Yeah, so, absolutely. I mean, yeah. I know that, you know, I've had that experience, you know, with a therapist or a coach, and I've been that I am that person for a lot of people, where sometimes you will just be kind of like in a mess about something for a really long time, and then get to have one good conversation with somebody and be like, holy shit, that's my truth. Like I've been able to figure it out and to say it out loud. Yeah. Another thing that I think for me, so I'm a very empathic person. I feel and sense a lot from the people in my environment. I'm very psychically open and aware. And I have come to realize that I need space in order to truly listen to myself, to trust myself. Like I need to go for a walk. I need to leave the house, or I need that other person to leave because, or if I need space from an interaction to like go away and sit with myself and be in my own field and my own feelings and really ask myself, right? Because you get to figure out how to ask yourself those questions of what do you really want and what do you really need? And those are kind of the two, you know, how does this feel, right? Does this feel good or not? And what do I really want? What do I really need? And to ask those questions without the influence of someone else. And for me, it's not just the influence of someone's words. It's the influence of someone's just beingness around me that can sometimes really be like, I'm not sure. Is this me or you or?
Physical proximity for sure. And, right. And so, you know, for everyone listening, like that may or may not be a thing for you, or that may or may not be a thing that's available to you. Right. But other people's energy influencing your decision-making process is super real, right? And if you're listening to this, you're probably an empath or sensitive person, or you probably are looking at this like, oh yeah, me too. So we can clear other people's energy from our field through clearing practices, through breath work, through shaking, through using a tuning fork, through smudging, through taking physical space, through, you know, kind of going into analysis mode and looking at, all right, so of all the inputs of information that I have about this particular decision, what is actually mine and what doesn't belong to me, right? And if it's helpful, you can make a list and look at, and I actually had a client do this recently where I had her write out everything about a particular decision situation that she was in, of what other people had told her or other people were expecting, or yeah, and I helped her with this, right? And we looked at like, okay, what of this actually is yours? There were like three things on the list that were actually her desires, needs, expectations, etc. And everything else that was maybe 20 things long belonged to other people. And it was a really fascinating visual exercise for her to look at, oh my gosh, right? Like, you know, I'm thinking about this because it's something my dad mentioned, and I'm, you know, factoring in like this thing about my work and their scheduling needs. And all of this was other people's stuff. But when it came down to it, what she was truly considering were only just a very few things. So then she was able to make her decision from what was actually important to her, and then work out all the details of how to then adjust her, how she became available to other people accordingly. But the decision was based on what she actually needed. So if you need to make a visual representation just to sort out everything that doesn't belong to you, or to get it out of the body or get it out of your field, then that's super helpful so you can hear yourself more clearly. I've actually, one of my big things in self-trust lately, and I guess it's tangentially related to self-trust, I have found it really, really helpful to just not really care what other people think of me, and to not care if other people like me. And I mean, I care to a certain extent, but like that's been, I'm okay disappointing people. And that was not always the case for me. I have a very long history in life of being people pleasing, you know, for, I don't know, the first couple decades of my life, that was really like a very deep desire to be liked and to fit in and to have people accept me and to feel belonging. And I got really comfortable with being like disappointing people. And not that I don't try to disappoint people, but I'm okay if I do. And I realized that, you know, in my decisions, I'm not, you know, I'm not hurting people, I'm not causing harm, I'm simply doing what's best for me, and I'm doing what's best for my dog, and what's best for my work, and I'm acting from a place of integrity around that. And for me, my highest priority has become integrity to myself, and integrity to my path, and to all of the things that I'm directly responsible for. And that has made it easier for me to be comfortable with if sometimes a decision that I make disappoints somebody else. Like, I'm okay with that, because for me, like, I know where my priorities are, and I trust myself to have that integrity as I'm making decisions. So I don't know, would that go under the self-trust category, or is that like a...
No, for sure. Because I think that's where a lot of our decisions come from, is like, how does this affect someone else? You know, like a lot of us were taught, like look at your life, look at the decisions you make every single day, the big ones, the small ones. And how many of those decisions are based primarily on other people and either making them happy or taking care of them or, you know, showing up in a certain way or whatever. And I mean, I still struggle with this one where it's like, oh, okay. I'm not allowed to disappoint someone, you know, because that's what I was taught in my home. Like if to disappoint was, I mean, the repercussions of disappointment were huge. So there was no way that I was going to disappoint. You know, and the reality is that trusting yourself, taking care of yourself, sometimes means that you disappoint other people.
Mm-hmm. And it's really, I mean, I'm totally going to wax nerdy on this for just a moment. Okay, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? If you happen to know what that looks like, it's a pyramid-shaped graphic that has different layers, different colored bars of layers on the, like the needs of humanity, right? And on the very bottom, on the red layers, like our survival, our food, our home, our shelter, clothing, you know, staying warm, right, is very basic primal level survival. And the next layer up is belonging, right? So community, family, belonging to your, you know, having people around you. Right. And so we look at, and then it gets, as it goes up, it gets into, I forget the order of them, but one of them is about, like self-esteem, one of which is about, like esteem in the community. And one is about meaning and purpose, right? Like as you go up the pyramid, they get smaller, but they also get more, what's the word I want to use? Like less concrete, like a little bit more like philosophical and like personal fulfillment, right? But at the very base level, it's around primal survival. And looking to self-trust, right? So the example around belonging, Kat, that you're giving, I mean, again, this is going back to the whole, as a kid, you didn't survive unless you belonged in your family, right? Like if you didn't have your parents or other adults or people taking care of you, you would die as a child. So as a child, the most important way that we can ensure our survival is to be agreeable and to be belonging to the community, to not disappoint people. And so we can almost look at like for children, that belonging actually is the very base layer that ensures our ability to survive. And as adults, we have other, other ways of, okay, maybe you have a job and you pay your bills and you have a house and, or you have an apartment or whatever it is, right? Like that survival piece, it almost like it kind of gets shifted back into the right order. But if we're still operating from the system of, I don't survive unless I belong, then it can, again, kind of hijack the way that we're operating and making decisions. So please know, and again, some of this can be come from inner child work. Some of this can come from reparenting yourself. There's a lot of techniques around this, or internal family systems therapy or constellation work, et cetera, that look to how do we go back and heal some of these dysfunctional, distorted dynamics that we had with our actual human embodied parents, with our inner mother and father parents, with our inner child self, to really soothe that and remove the need, like that pathological need to be liked, and separate that from true belonging. Because true belonging, actually belonging in your community and your family, isn't dependent on people pleasing. It's not dependent upon making sure that everyone is comfortable and everyone is, likes you and approves of your decisions, right? Like I have people in my life where I make decisions that they don't agree with and they still love me. And I have people in my life who make decisions I don't agree with and I still love them. And there's compassion and there's understanding, because that's mature, mature belonging. But if we're operating from the, I need to belong in order to survive, so I'm going to sacrifice my own truth, my own identity, my own sense of self and trust to myself in service to belonging, that's unhealthy belonging. That's the distorted survival-based need to please.
And this is where a lot of people, will have to make breaks with their family or different people in their lives, because you come to a point where you realize that your truth, your real deep truth is more important, than what you've been taught. And that if those people choose to not love you because you are trusting yourself and being true to yourself, then it's really hard to have a real relationship with them. So it might mean that there is some change in relationships, and maybe they come back, or maybe they just, move around a little bit. But oftentimes on this path of learning to trust yourself, you might piss some people off, where they're not used to you behaving that way. And one of our earliest episodes was on boundaries. So if this is something that you're struggling with, that would be a good one to look at. And starting to look at and, how we interact with others when we've really set them up to expect us to behave a certain way.
Great.
I want to just say one thing, which is one thing that I say to myself, which does always makes me feel a little bit better, is that I get to want what I want and I get to have what I want. And that's this kind of this like little mantra when I'm like, oh, but I should be taking care of this person's feelings, or, oh, I should be doing this because this person really wants to do this with me or whatever. And it's like, I don't want to go or something. And I'm just like, no, I get to want what I want. I get to have what I want. And I calm my little nervous self down and give myself permission. So maybe that'll help.
That's beautiful. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for joining us. And as I said, that's the perfect segue to our next episode. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, though, you can find all of our episodes on YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify. Please like and subscribe. Share this with anyone you think needs help trusting themselves. I'm willing to bet that you know someone who needs support in trusting themselves. And and please give us a follow so you can stay up to date on everything that we're doing here at Shaman Sister Sessions.